the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Joining you once again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. On the other line, Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is at all the games. He has had a lot of interesting contests here since the All-Star break. Since we last checked in, the Bucks have played four times. They eviscerated Detroit last Thursday, and then Matt, I think we could call this maybe the most impressive three-game stretch of the Bucks season. They win at home against Philadelphia and do so in convincing fashion against the best player in the world, Joel Embiid. And they go out to Washington and have to really fight their way past the Wizards. The Wizards are a team that the Bucks are already guaranteed to have a better record than, but they managed to pull this game off in overtime without Giannis on the floor, out with fouls. And then they go to Toronto against the other best team in the Eastern Conference and win on the road. Very impressive. Is that how you look at it as well, that this is the stretch that maybe sort of gave the Bucks one more shot of national confidence, that this is the team to beat?
I would say so. I mean, I think this was very impressive. About as impressive as the stretches they've had, as you mentioned. I'm trying to look at the schedule right now and see if there's been a better, like, three-game stretch. And it's hard to find one. I mean, there've been, like, really impressive games, but not enough, you know, condensed games against really good teams. You'll follow, like, the Clippers game in December with a game against the Magic and, you know, the Pelicans without Zion. It's like, okay, well, you expect them to win those, but being able to, you know, take the schedule that they had now coming out of the break and do what they've done, especially, you know, being able to beat Philly. I know Ben Simmons didn't play very much. We can talk about that at some point. But, you know, being able to beat Philly and really throttle them at home, be able to hold off, you know, a career high 55-point night from Bradley Beal. And to do it, like you said, without Giannis, who had fouled out, you know, missed the last, you know, six and a half minutes of that game, and to get a whole bunch of contributions up and down the board. Chris Middleton was fabulous. Eric Bledsoe was great. Robin Lopez saved the day with a block. George Hill's defense was fantastic. But then to go to Toronto, on national TV, you know, in the place where they had lost, you know, three games in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and to be able to weather an early kind of storm and be down 12 and then bounce back and be able to win by 11. I think that was just a really impressive game. And especially on the second night of a back-to-back where a bunch of guys, you know, including like Chris Middleton had played 40 minutes. He was the first Bucks player to play 40 minutes in a game all regular season, on Monday night. So to come off an overtime game in DC to travel up to Toronto, with all the, you know, the memories of last year in their heads, and do what they did, I thought it was really, really impressive and a really good stretch for them heading into what will be, you know, another difficult week and difficult stretch and really difficult, you know, last 24 games heading into the postseason because of the teams they still have on their schedule.
Yeah, they play the Oklahoma City Thunder at Pfizer Forum on Friday night. Really interesting game. A couple games from now. Well, they go to Charlotte, and then the Miami Heat. They're going to be in Miami on March 2nd. That's going to be a really interesting game on Monday. So a team that the Bucks have only seen once and beat them earlier this year.
Yeah, and that's the second night of a back-to-back. They play in the afternoon in Charlotte on Sunday before playing in Miami on Monday night. I guess that's better than playing two afternoon games, which I think is what they did last year, where they did an afternoon game in Miami and then an afternoon game in Washington, or flip-flop those two, if I can remember correctly. Not playing in Miami in the afternoon is good. I think playing in Miami at night is a little bit better, coming off an afternoon game. That's still a tough back-to-back, especially when you think about, you know, the Thunder have been really good, and this will be the third game in four nights. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting, difficult stretch coming up, and it should be a bunch of fun games.
Yeah, I think what you're hitting on is why that Raptors win is so impressive. The back-to-back nature, I think after you see them go to overtime against Washington, even though they claw out that victory, you got to be thinking, even as an optimistic Bucks fan who knows how good this team is, that they're really in an uphill battle going up against the other best team in the East, a team that is on an is white hot, has won, I don't even know what it was, 14 to 15 or something ridiculous. And Drake shows up with his two WWE belts. Nice troll job by Drake to try to get in the head of Giannis, who's of course bringing a WWE style belt with him on the road. Apparently, had it in Washington, had it in Toronto, but it seemed like that was going to be a surefire loss. And I don't know what you'd point to as the tide turner, so to speak. You mentioned Toronto obviously took control of that game early. The Bucks did get some favorable whistles, which helped, but they hit a lot of shots. And Giannis, and you wrote about this at jsonline.com, Giannis, I mean, his numbers are still great, 19 and 19. I mean, those are good numbers, but did not need to take over that game, did not feel like he had to take over that game. And when they were doubling him and throwing as much defense as they could at the Bucks superstar, he was able to distribute and get other guys involved. And it seemed like, I don't know if there's a play or a moment that really sort of exemplifies how they were able to turn that game around, but it does seem like that sort of understated work by Giannis is sort of what makes him additionally so special and enables the Bucks to thrive even when they've got Giannis maybe quote-unquote figured out to a small degree.
Yeah, and it was interesting, you know, on Monday night in Washington after the game, you know, obviously he was frustrated because he had fouled out. But obviously was still out there, still supporting his teammates and happy for them, fist pumping when Chris made some shots and all that. But after the game, I talked to Giannis and I was like, hey, you know, among other questions, I eventually said, hey, you know, how do you take the way you feel tonight and use that as fuel for tomorrow? He's like, come on, man. Like, how long you been around me? And I was like, like 3 years on the beat, you know, 6 years in total. He said, no, how long? And I was like, well, since your rookie year. He goes, okay, so you know me. So what do you think? What do you think I usually do in a situation? I'm like, well, you usually turn things up. And he's like, exactly. So we'll see tomorrow night. You know, that was the whole interaction. And, you know, but it kind of just speaks to, like, that's his mentality. His mentality is when he gets angry, when he gets frustrated, when he has a game that he doesn't think he played well in, even though he was 8 of 12 from the floor for, like, you know, 22 point, whatever it was, you know, he only played 25 minutes, and he wasn't out there for crunch time, and he had 6 fouls, and he was not happy with how he played. Even though he had played, you know, well, if you look at everything else, he hadn't played to his standards. And so when he has games like that, like, he usually, you know, ramps things up and kind of takes out his frustration on the opposing team. And so you know how much he wanted to do that. Like, he kind of made that clear. And early in the game, he was trying to be aggressive, and the Raptors, every time he touched the ball, were sending double teams. And they're sending, you know, it's not like they're sending kind of smalls on him. They're sending, you know, Serge Ibaka and OG Anunoby, like, guys who are big and long and, like, you know, can make it really difficult for him to kind of, like, generate any momentum to go, you know, toward the hoop. And he recognizes, all right, it's not going to be the night. It's not going to happen. I can't do that. And he decided not to force it. And because he didn't force it, he was able to find his teammates and make things happen. And in that first quarter, you know, he hit Brook Lopez for a corner three. He hit Brook Lopez again for a corner three. He hit Robin Lopez for a corner three. Like, there might have been more assists if guys had maybe made a few other shots. But he was, you know, demonstrating that he was willing to, you know, to make things happen for his teammates. And over the course of the game, particularly in the third quarter, you know, he had 4 assists alone in the third quarter. He decided he was just going to, you know, rebound, you know, extra hard and try to push off those rebounds and maybe be able to get something going in transition. But outside of that, he was just going to try to make the right play. You know, I know you have young kids, do the next right thing. So there you go.
Thank you, Elsa.
Little Frozen 2 reference. My kids have been talking about Frozen 2 a lot recently, so I got a lot of references in my head right now. But he's gonna just do those things, and he's gonna find ways to impact the game like that. And he played a lot. He played like 38, 39 minutes, which is a lot for him. You know, considering the Bud doesn't like to play him, you know, a ton. But he really just didn't force all that much. He only took 14 shots. He was 5-14. A lot of mid-range attempts, things that he has been trying to work on, particularly since the All-Star break, trying to mix more mid-range shots, more turnaround jumpers into his bag of tricks. And I thought that was a really mature performance from him. And obviously, you know, it helps the guys are making shots, that Marvin Williams is making corner threes, and Chris Middleton really, you know, got rolling again in that second half, and scored 17 of his 22 points in the final two quarters. Just a really impressive team performance from the Bucks, and I think that, you know, a lot of that stems from Giannis not trying to do too much and just trying to, you know, play his role and help his teammates and take what the defense was given.
I was trying to find a way to fit into the unknown into the next question. I have no way of doing it, but I go back down to that Washington game where Robin Lopez makes the block that sort of that's really helped send the game into overtime. A huge block on Rui Hachimura, and that was a key game in that Giannis, like we said, was fouled out. Brook Lopez was not playing in that game, and I think we've talked about this before, but I feel like it's sort of the conversation with Brook last year when they signed him that was a nice signing, but I don't know if anyone foresaw that signing Brook Lopez would be a game changer for the Bucks, and we talked about the many ways he was. Now, Robin Lopez isn't a game changer to that degree, but what he enables them to do is always have at least two elite rim protectors on the floor at a given time, Giannis being one of them. Brook and Robin are interchangeable, and you always have a Lopez on the floor, and that means everything is getting contested. It happens all the time that teams just don't get easy looks around the basket. And there was a really good piece by The Ringer looking at the Bucks, asking the question, is this the best defense in NBA history? And I don't think the conclusion said definitively yes, but it put them in the conversation with some of the best defensive teams ever. And part of it is this incredible rim defense that we've talked about, interior defense. I think we maybe even asked this question before, but when they signed Robin Lopez, do you think that was the understanding of what they were capable of with their defense? Because, I mean, Brook Lopez was more so an offensive contributor last year, as much as a defensive one, but he isn't necessarily that this year. They've sort of moved him inside to be that, you know, that blocker, that guy who keeps anybody from driving Robin the same way. And I don't know if this was all consciously mapped out, but clearly signing Robin Lopez has been a much bigger deal than I think we could have envisioned.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be important, more so that the Bucks would finally have a true backup center. Like, they haven't had that for a couple years. I think maybe the last one they had was like Tyler Zeller.
Tyler Zeller.
I'm just trying to think, like, the last time they had like two big physical like centers, and maybe they haven't had that, because you'd have to count John Henson in that first example as a big physical center. Shout out to John Henson, lefty hook god. But we kind of saw this summer that like they wanted to get someone to fill that role, so that, like, you know, potentially, you know, if they were playing, you know, Joel Embiid and the Sixers in the playoffs, like, that you would be able to just throw Lopez after Lopez, you know, at him, and then you're never giving up size, you're never giving up like physicality and strength, like, you just constantly have someone like that. And I think that, you know, Robin's addition was good and solid and maybe underrated like Brooks was. But I think at least, you know, we had the idea of what Brook did in his first year to pick, okay, well, maybe Robin can be that, you know, at least on defense. And the question is, can he, you know, impact the team offensively in, you know, a similar way, or, you know, will he start shooting threes at all, and can he be proficient at all on those? And I think he generally has been. He's embraced that. I just think about that Washington game, where if this is last year and Brook isn't playing and Giannis is fouled out, they're almost certainly, you know, at this point in the season, playing Ersan Ilyasova as their center at that point. Like, he's going to be in the game, and he's not blocking that shot. Like, it's just not happening. Like, and the way that Hachimura cut across the paint, there was no chance for him to take a charge either. Like, there was no chance. So, like, that would have been curtains. Like, that would have been game over, Wizards win in regulation. Like, more likely than not. Or maybe, you know, the Bucks call timeout and they get a miracle three with, like, the, you know, as a buzzer beater. But still, like, that, you know, just that play doesn't get made. And so when you have Robin Lopez out there and you have that, you know, elite rim defense that he brings, obviously Giannis, Brook, and Robin are literally 1-2-3 in opponent shooting percentage at the rim in the whole league. So you have him out there, and he can do that. He can clean up messes, and that just makes the Bucks better as a team, because, you know, and Nick Nurse mentioned this before the game you know, in Toronto saying, like, if you get a guy who is has a Lopez and Giannis on him, like, good luck. Like, what are you going to do? Like, more often than not, you were not going to make that shot. And, you know, I think that's just kind of what they bring in the way that their defense, you know, is structured. You know, they're trying to get players to try and, you know, contest their bigs and go in among the trees because they know that more often than not, it's going to end up, you know, really good for them.
So let's go back now to that 76ers game. That was certainly a compelling matchup. They had met already twice before, had split the first two meetings. And you had Joel Embiid sort of famously saying in a previous game that he was the best player in the world. I think that maybe got blown a little bit out of proportion based on how I was reading it. But that's obviously something that's going to get Bucks fans' attention. They believe they have the best player in the world on their team. Giannis had another outstanding game. And I wonder, first of all, if you think that sort of thing motivates him when he hears other players. I know he's got a good relationship with Joel Embiid, chose him for the All-Star team. So I have to think they're on pretty good terms. But if something like that is something that catches Giannis's attention and inspires him the way that you were describing earlier, the way that having a bad performance might fuel the next one. You also wrote about how Giannis seems to have discovered this sort of turnaround jumper, this step back jumper, which to me feels like almost a direct commentary on what we were hearing around the All-Star game, that Giannis doesn't have a mid-range shot. Well, now he's showcasing his mid-range shot. He took some threes against Toronto again and hit some big ones. So it seems to me that Giannis sort of hears the tweets, so to speak, and adjusts accordingly. I don't know how much this stuff really drives him, but there was certainly some things that I was noticing going into that 76ers game.
I think it'd be foolish to think he doesn't hear these things or doesn't know these things. I know that he was made aware of Joel Embiid's comments, you know, before the game, or at least was he had talked about them or had heard them in some capacity. I thought he handled the question well, saying, like, you know, hey, you want me to go viral? You want me to say something, start a beef? And he's like, I'm not going to do that. Like, everybody in the NBA should think that they're the best player in the world. Like, you know, no, he wouldn't fault Joel Embiid for that. You know, but I thought his play spoke for him. Like, you know, he didn't need to respond in kind. He could say all the right, you know, gracious things, but he was not gracious in any way on the court. and I think that, you know, the thing with the mid-range, yes, everybody was talking about it around the All-Star game because we had a lot of time on our hands and people decide they want to, you know, really go in on an exhibition game and see what's going on. But Giannis said that he was working on this mid-range shot, you know, before the All-Star break when he had time after the birth of his son. Like, he was in the gym, like, working on, you know, his turnaround jumpers and different things. And, you know, he's been talking about it since last spring. Like, you know, those were the shots that Kawhi Leonard was taking. He was taking mid-range shots, you know, to, you know, little by little, like, knock off the Bucks, like, because they were cutting off the rim. He didn't take, you know, a ton of threes. It was mostly, you know, pull-up jumpers for him. So he saw that those are the shots that he needed to take because he isn't going to get to the rim as easily in the playoffs. Like, he, you know, he'll still get there a decent amount, but he's not going to get there as often or as easily. So if he can mix in a few jumpers and maybe even use those jumpers like head fakes and things like that to, you know, open up drives for himself, you know, he'll do that. And over the past four games, since the All-Star break, he's been really trying to get those going and mix those in part of his game. And, you know, the early returns, I think, are encouraging for him. But getting back to the original question, I don't know how much, all the talk motivates him just because I think he's a supremely motivated person on his own. He's going to get in the gym. He's going to work on different aspects of his game. He's going to strive to be the best because of who he is, because of who he's always been, not necessarily because, you know, some person on some radio station, some writer, some podcast, some talking head is deciding to call him out for this, that, the thing, or even if some other player calls himself the best player in the world, he's just going to keep being Giannis. And I think that that's a pretty good place for him to be.
I wonder who you're talking about. There's lots of possibilities there. And if you Google the Bucks right now, you're going to see another wave of stories. This is something we've talked about before, too, talking about how they're sort of quietly navigating towards 70 wins. They'd be the third team in NBA history if they can somehow hit that mark. Still a long shot in my mind, and I think yours as well. But, you know, they are still on pace for that sort of thing. And a lot of writing about just how good this team is, and no one seems to care. And that comes down to market a little bit. And I would float looking at college basketball, I would say, well, if Milwaukee fans, who are flummoxed by the fact that the Bucks don't get the attention they deserve, do they think Gonzaga is going to win the NCAA title? Because we're talking about, with Gonzaga, a program that, you know, is sustained success, is clearly one of the best in the nation, but they don't have that cachet of a team you think of because they're not a blue blood, much like Milwaukee is not a blue blood city. It's not one of the major markets, and it doesn't have that sort of cachet yet, and especially because they haven't won a title or even been to the NBA Finals since 1974. So I think some of it is fair. I know the Bucks don't care. I know you don't care if there's national attention being paid to this team or if they're given their due, so to speak. Is there any side effect that we're not thinking of that could be detracting? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is there any reason for Bucks fans to feel like this being slighted, so to speak, is really could have some sort of an impact, some negative impact on this team?
I don't see any reason why there'd be a negative impact. I think there's only a possibility for it to be good. I mean, if you can still play like the nobody believes in us card, like, and have 50 wins and 8 losses, I think that's pretty rare. Just people like, you know, they put out you know, a video after the All-Star break talking about like how nobody talks about them and people sleep on them and, you know, they just don't care. Like, they're just going to keep doing their thing. That's really what they're trying to do. So if no one's going to talk about them, like, they're cool with that. Like, they don't really worry about that. Like, go ahead, sleep on us. Like, we'll just keep doing our thing. I don't think that they're worried about it. I think it means there's fewer distractions. They're not trying to be anything that they're not. They just want to go get their work done, like, wrestle each other, like, fight some mascots, like, beat up on opposing teams, and like move on with their lives. And, you know, this is a very well-oiled machine. It's funny because Marvin Williams, you know, he was asked after the game against the Raptors, like, what the locker room was like. Obviously, you know, the Bucks had just beaten the Raptors, the team they had lost to in the Eastern Conference Finals, in a building where they had lost all three games, Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you might expect some like celebration or excitement or whatever. Like, Marvin, like, what's it like? You're new to this. Like, what's kind of your outside view? And he's like, it was pretty chill. He's like, they're a lot more relaxed, honestly, than I thought they would be. Like, they just kind of like do their thing, and like that's it. And, you know, that's who they are. Like, that's who they are behind closed doors. That's who they are. Like, when we're, you know, in the locker room with them, like, they are just, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast. I always kind of compare them to my wife had a softball team that she played on, and they kept making new leagues as they got older, just so that they can keep playing together. And they would like barely ever practice, like kind of just roll the ball out there, no matter who was playing what position, no matter what happened in the game, and they would just win. Like, they were just good. They just like played together for a long time, and you know, and that's kind of what, and they laughed and they joked and they had a ton of fun. And they just won. And I feel like, you know, that's kind of the same situation the Bucks are in. And I know this analogy literally doesn't make sense or matter to anyone else. But in my head, like, in my life, like, that's how it is. Like, you know, the Bucks are the Windsor Raptors of Connecticut high school girls softball.
I love that. That is a crucial comparison that no one else will make. Last thing before I let you go, Chase Buford, the NBA or the G League coach of the Wisconsin Herd, became a national story with a post-game referee rant. Crazy hair, crazy eyes, talking about how if you haven't seen it, I don't know why. You clearly don't live on the internet, but just Google Chase Buford, Wisconsin Herd. You'll find it. He was calling the officials everything he could think of within reason, I guess, and got a 2-game suspension. I'm curious what your reaction was to that, because that was kind of sensational. I mean, there's like two minds of this, like, oh, that's disrespectful, but also kind of amazing. And then I guess, what do you know about, since we now know Chase Buford's name nationally, How does the G League coach interact with the big league team? Like, what's the sort of relationship there between the Herd and the Bucks, and what role does he play in sort of facilitating this whole thing?
Yeah, so first of all, the rant was incredible and wonderful, and I loved it.
I loved it.
I would feel the same way no matter what the sport was, no matter who the coach was. Like, literally, like, rants like that, like, I know that, you know, they're not, like, good manners or, like, not the right thing to do. What, I don't care. It's just fun. It's for me, that's entertainment. And, like, it's, you know, I don't judge the person too much. In fact, maybe idolize them more.
yes.
My initial reaction, though, was like, oh, man, this is hilarious. This is fun. Like, I love when this happens. Oh, no, am I going to have to do any work? Like, that was kind of my thought. Like, oh, if this was from any other team, like, I could just be like, you know, fire off some like LOL tweet and like move on. And I was like, oh man, like,
that's where I come in, man.
Yeah, that's why you're the greatest. But you know, I'm starting to think about that. Any other team, and this would just like not enter my consciousness again, other than like just chuckling about it. But in terms of the G League team, obviously, you know, the one thing we haven't mentioned is that the Herd are the best team in the G League.
It's true.
The Bucks are the best team in the NBA. The Herd are the best team in the G League. I think both have single-digit losses, which obviously the Herd season is shorter and fewer games, so having single-digit losses isn't as impressive, but it's still impressive at this point in the season. And, you know, the two teams work really closely in concert with one another. The Herd run all the same plays and schemes as the Bucks do. They're trying to use that as grounds for you know, younger guys. You know, you think of your DJ Wilsons, your Cam Reynolds, Frank Mason, Dragan Bender for a lot of the season before he was let go, Sterling Brown, Thanasis Adetokounmpo has been there, trying to use that as an opportunity for those types of guys to get more of a run, get more play, and when they're running the same schemes, using the same terminology in the G League, then they can come up to the NBA, and if they do get into a game, they know what they're doing. And they kind of hit the ground running. So I think it's been an overall really positive year for the Bucks and for the Herd. This, you know, suspension and rant for Chase Buford would be a blip on the radar, a learning experience for him, and, you know, something for the, you know, that, yeah, obviously made waves for like a day. And I guess that's one positive thing about internet culture nowadays, is that things like that blow up and they have like kind of a really brief, you know, blinding light, and then they're gone. Like, you just kind of forget and you move on with your life. And I think that's what will happen. And everybody learn from it. Chase Buford's, it'll be a little bit lighter, I'm sure, with a fine involved. And everybody moves on.
We will also move on. We'll keep it pretty short this week. But the Bucks, like we said, they are back in action Friday night at Pfizer Forum, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Lots of fun matchups here. A lot of big-time matchups. I think that's why this burst out of the All-Star break was so refreshing, because now they're going up against some of the better teams, some of the better challenges that they're going to face. He is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find him at jsonline.com. All his material is there. Matt, thanks for joining us. We will chat again next week.
All right. Can't wait.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Leave us a rating or review. Let us know what you think. Find us on Twitter. We're pretty easy to find, at JR Radcliffe, at Matt Velasquez, Matt_Velasquez, right? And that we appreciate the feedback. We love it all. So thanks so much for tuning in. We will catch you again very soon.